Start off with the scripture. That in there. Gonna read, I think it says in the bulletins, from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 34. Probably a lot of us are familiar with the walk to Emmaus. That same day, two of Jesus's followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them, but God kept them from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. That's a comment that's actually kind of funny. He clearly knows more than anyone. The things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth, they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago. Then some women from our group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the women had said. Then Jesus said to them, 'You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?' Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he were going on, but they begged him, 'Stay the night with us, since it is getting late.' So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him. And at that moment he disappeared. They said to each other, 'Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?' And within the hour they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, 'The Lord has really risen.' And he appeared to Peter." Chose that scripture because, you know, something's right in front of their eyes. And even before Jesus comes along, they're trying to figure it out. Like we all are in our lives on earth trying to figure it out. And then we just can't always understand something that's right in front of our noses, but it's always revealed in God's time, which is the best time. Another side comment to that is, you know, imagine a natural disaster comes, tornado, floods, hurricane, whatever, and what you were going to do the next day no longer matters. It won't matter for a long time, probably. And before we dive into the pictures of the slideshow and stuff, I guess maybe kind of start out with how I got to do that. Aaron and I, on September 22nd, I remember it because it was the day before our anniversary, we chose to go see Ricky Skaggs, famous bluegrass musician. Side note, his thing is called the mandolin that he's known for playing. That turned 100 years old in December. So we went to go see him, and it was actually, it was a benefit concert for the flood victims in Eastern Kentucky. And so it was when Aaron and I left, we were pulling out, getting ready to pull out and stuff. And we're just both like, felt so refreshed from that concert. That was the best way to describe it. And just felt really blessed. And We even commented, somebody like honked, and we're like, well, apparently they don't feel that refreshed. So anyway, the following day, like I said, was our anniversary. That's when most people know Aaron had his brush with death. I would not say that Aaron's accident caused me to jump into this project, but I had a lot of time to think when I was with him in the hospital and after. Excuse me. But for a long time, Aaron and I have talked about volunteering for natural disaster relief. Stuff's always in the news. There's always something happens. I think the most recent thing was tornadoes in Georgia and Alabama, and the lives that that's affected, and the rest of us just keep moving on. A lot of times you forget about them, like as time goes on, that something even happened, and they're still trying to recover from it. So we've talked for a long time, like, boy, wouldn't it be really nice if we could just participate in helping other people. So if anything, I would say I was actually inspired by the love shown to Aaron and I in the days and weeks after his accident. I remember Aaron said, he goes, I didn't realize so many people cared. It felt really good that so many people reached out. So I chose to act, and Aaron supported me, even though we felt he would have to stay behind this one time, since he had missed so much work already. He told me to scope it out for us. So within 3 weeks, I had signed up and proceeded to get permission from my superiors at work, Mechanics Bank, for humanitarian leave. Mechanics Bank, I don't know if you want to call it a perk or something. They do offer you can take 1 week of humanitarian leave in a year. It's not an automatic, like, oh, I'm going to go do this. Like, it'll have to be approved and things like that. So I'm very thankful that they made it work. All right, we'll go to the next slide. Breathitt County was the county that I went to with Mennonite Disaster Service. And I forget, Breathitt, Perry, Knott, and Letcher counties were the ones most affected. And the overnight rain of July 28th into 29th, was when they had all the torrential rains. The flood stage hit a new record of 43.42 feet. That's a lot of feet of water. The previous high mark was in 1939. And that was at 43.1 feet, so not too far. The flood stage in Breathitt County is 29 feet. So it was really high. So we'll go to the next stage. Actually, can you back up 1 second? That was a map that we had in the camp, and I tried to make it a little bit dark. I don't know if you can see, like, kind of bottom right of it. Someone wrote camp. That was where I stayed. And I've tried to make it dark. There's like this drive that we took along Lost Creek. It was actually, they said the worst flooding was right there. And took it to the main route to then where we were going to go work. Took that every single day back and forth. And I remember when I was driving there and I pulled on that road and my head was just all over the place, like a bobblehead, just everything that I was seeing. And this was, you know, the last days of November, beginning of December, months later, and just stuff that's still there. Everything left behind. Okay, next. So I took a lot of the information from the Mennonite Disaster Service page, but those torrential rains washed out homes and roads forced people to the rooftops. 38 people died, and many had to be rescued. One, I was told, was still missing. They never found. The steep slopes of the Appalachian Mountains allow the water to rush quickly down into the narrow valleys, or what we would call the haulers, below, trapping them, because they're, I mean, it's very wavy and curvy and stuff anyway. And so in this storm, they only had 20 minutes to get out. Three inches of rain will cause flooding, and they had 8 to 12 in less than 10 hours. And all this, a lot of this stuff was late at night or in the middle of the night for people. Okay, next. There's just some pictures I also pulled. The bottom right one, I'm not sure which happened first, you know, the cars going under the house or the house going on over top the cars when it landed. I don't know. I can't describe, there's so many houses just washed away, landed someplace different than where they're supposed to be at. So next slide. One of the guys that was on the crew that helped, he's from Auglaize County, Ohio, but he actually grew up in that county. So he had family there and stuff. And he said that they had kind of figured that a lot of the bridges that made it because the water was so high, everything just went over it rather than ripping it out. That picture on the left there, I thought was appropriate, you know, help. And is it the camp director where we were staying? We're staying at the Bethel Mennonite camp for youth. He said that he knew of one survivor. She was still scared to put her feet on the floor from her bed every morning because she had woke up to go to the bathroom, put her feet on the floor into water. And that's when it all started for her. Just still was highly affected from that. The picture on the right, that's a chest freezer. How high do you suppose that is in the trees? I'd say about 30 feet. So again, that's months later. I don't want to be on underneath of it when it comes down. All right, next slide. So Danny's home, he lived in this trailer park. This is just some outside pictures of his trailer. He had tried to do some of the stuff on his own. Didn't work out very well. And that little tool shed on the right, he was living in that. He had put a little insulation on the door. He was adding on to it, actually. He had a TV, something to make coffee with. He was fine. So next slide. This is a picture I took when we first stepped into his home. It was just gutted. It just wanted to start from the very beginning. So we did the flooring. When I was there, there was a lot of very talented workers. And so they were able to do a lot before we left. So we did flooring, insulation, drywall, electric, plumbing, painting, and even started some trim on it. Next slide. A new home, Merry Christmas to me. Danny said that. Danny, not only was he from, you know, Appalachia, so as a little bit, talks a little bit different than I do. He was even more like cotton in his mouth than other people. He was hard to understand. And so a lot of times he would come in and people didn't always feel comfortable like having a conversation or trying to have a conversation with him because of that. That is actually something MDS encouraged people. They said, if the owner's there and they want to talk, put your tools down and talk to them. You know, just that's more important. So Danny would come in usually a couple times a day to check on things. And sometimes he'd stop and talk, you know, a little bit to me. And I just remember he was like singing to himself when he said that. He was so happy. And I will say to the picture on the right has counters the cupboards there. I'll show you pictures from Sandy's house. She donated the countertops to him because she was just going to replace hers. And then I suspect that one of the people on our team that week paid for the cupboards that were going to go into his kitchen. Just kind of give you some of an idea of like how they do the funding maybe for different projects. Kind of pull from different places. So next slide, please. My little contribution. So when I signed up, I was hoping they would just say you can be a cook because I can do that. Honestly, so I was a little bit like, and to say, when I walked in the doors, it really hit me. I said, oh, Leah, what have you done? I know no one here. And they all happen to be Mennonite. It worked like that week. And I'm not a cook, so I don't know what I'm doing. I was like, oh, what have you done? And it was hard for the first couple of days. And I even still wonder a little bit what I was doing there. But they ministered to me a lot. And then they say they'll teach you how to run a saw. You know, they'll teach you anything. So if you guys want to do something and you're like, I can't do that, they'll figure out a way for you to do it. So I was just taking a picture. The ceiling, you can see some of it on the left there. I put 4 coats of primer on that ceiling. And it just kept wanting to like come through. And they want to make it nice for people. And so they're like, another coat. So I got to know that ceiling really well. The fourth and final coat, he went and got me this. It was always Kills, but he got me a different kind of Kills, and it really stunk up the place. The guys were complaining like crazy. So we had to open up everything, but it finally did it. So he was going to have a nice ceiling. I don't think that trailer had ever been cleaned, like ever. So that was kind of difficult. Middle picture, they were starting to work on some of the trim, and they had me work on caulking it to make it a little bit nicer. And then the one on the right, it was the snap together flooring. So because I'm so slow, I only got like half of it done. The other guy just jumped in and, you know, cause he does it all the time. So, anyway, but I tried. So next slide, please. Sandy's house. It's a cute little house. Some notes on her. She grew up in that house with her 6 siblings, and they only had 2 inner doors, one on her parents' door and one on the bathroom. That was it. she was a retired Toyota engineer, and I don't know when she had moved back, not too long ago, to take care of her ailing parents. I don't know when her dad finally passed, but in March, her mom had passed, and so she was there by herself with her dog named Rocky. And then her son was a Kentucky State Trooper, and he passed away the next month. He had colon cancer. It's so sad. But she was very like upbeat, just very likable woman. We're Facebook friends now. So the way her situation works, she paid for all of her supplies. She just needed somebody to put it in. She had family, and they tried to help as much as they could, but they were also like just super busy themselves, you know. And I really like she said that her and her sister had plans when her house was done, they were going to take time and help people in their homes that still needed help. So I really like that she wanted to pay that forward. All right, next slide. Okay, so Sandy's house, she had gotten, I think she said 4 to 5 feet of water in it. Her neighbor's house, you can see, was just down the drive, back behind it, was completely submerged. You couldn't see the roof, she said. And they actually, I guess, Samaritan's Purse, you know, they're down there as well, and they condemned the house, said it, we can't do anything. And so she was building, she had like a small building close to the road. And so they were adding on to that and then making that into her new home. But yeah, just very, you know, 4 to 5 feet in this house and so close, the whole house just covered. All right, next slide, please. This was across from Sandy's house, and honestly, this was a very common scene in much of the area. Just that those that is what is left behind from a house that gets washed away. And there's a lot of that, especially along Lost Creek. She lived pretty close to Jackson, so she wouldn't be, I guess, considered in a hauler, but you know, they had a creek or river along the side. I think FEMA had gone in and actually pulled a lot of the houses out of the water. Along Lost Creek, I really feel like there was these four houses that were just super, super close together. Like, I don't even know if you fit a person between them. And I'm like, those are gotta be some houses they pulled out of the water and just set them up there. All right, next. Oh, this is in the inside of Sandy's house, final touches. They were finishing up with hers. And so she had this nice trim she wanted done. So I helped the guys with that. And also she was living in there. So you'd have to move stuff sometimes. So I tried to do that. The guys that I was working with on that project, they were carpenters. They were really good at what they were doing. And they struggled because nothing in her house was level. You know, exactly. So, you know, just even they wanted to make it super nice, and they spent a lot of time to make it as nice as possible. So, and then she'd had the one kid, he put the flooring down in this closet in the middle there, and then he had to put up a door, and it was crazy. The frame that he put in and then the wall, I mean, there's this huge, huge gap, and just, bless his heart, he spent a lot of time on that, and I don't think he'd ever even done a door before. The guys, you know, would come in and kind of give him tips and stuff, but I thought he did a great job. And they let me run that little red nail gun thing. They're like, promise you can't hurt yourself. I'm like, uh-huh. So, but yeah, we did good. So next slide, please. They always do a home dedication. So I got to be there when they dedicated Sandy's home, and she's holding a quilt wall hanging that they gave her. And they said that they have people that, you know, they feel like they can't do anything else, but they can do that. And so everybody that gets their house dedicated gets this quilt wall hanging that someone made. So she was just super ecstatic. Like, she's a sweet woman. Next slide, please. All right, this is the crew I got to work with. They're from, like I said, Auglaize County, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, and even Alabama in that picture. And every single person in that picture, except for me, has been on multiple trips like this. They've done this multiple times. was very humbling for me. The one couple, Jenny, she's in the pink shirt. I'm standing by her. And then her husband's clear to your right, in the back. They do this, I believe they said, every other year for 3 to 6 weeks in the wintertime. I just thought that was, you know, that they were dedicated to do it and they enjoy it. The project field leader, I believe we call him, he's in the front row, clear to the right in the blue shirt. He's a retired hospital facility manager. And honestly, I think he spends more time on these projects than he does in his own home. I think he said he'll go to these things for a couple of months, go home for a month, and go back and do it again. And I think about now he actually was scheduled to go to Texas. So I don't know who was going to take over his spot here, but he was going to change it up and go someplace different. So next slide. And before I forget, he said he expects they'll be there in Breathitt County for probably another 2 years. They're there for the long term. This is the camp where we stayed, the base. It's my understanding they did a little bit of, the camp was actually having a camp in session when this happened. And they were flooded as well. And so MDS went in and did some things to, you know, help them first. And then they let us move in to use their facilities. They said when they were having their camp session, you know, some of the kids were from the local area and they couldn't get a hold of their families. It's so hard to think of how that had to been. I guess they said they continued on with their camp plans. The picture to the right, is these steps, there's, I think, 50, 55 steps up to my cabin. And they told me this ahead of time. They called me and just went over a couple housekeeping things with me just so I would have a little bit more of an idea of what I was getting into. I was the only one in my cabin because I was the only girl. And the guys were like, oh, you're nice over there. I'm like, well, it's really lonely, actually. But in this case, too, there were two couples there, and they were able to have a separate place for them. But they said they can't. A lot of times that doesn't work out. They have to, you know, girls in one area, guys in the other. It doesn't matter if people are married or not. Just kind of keep that in mind. All right, next slide. So just kind of a breakdown of Mennonite Disaster Service, how they serve. You can volunteer for a day, a weekend, week, longer. Groups are definitely welcome, or you can go like little old me. And they do try to accommodate couples. The different jobs, project leader, construction supervisor, I believe they get like special training, even the crew leaders. So at the time we were there, we were usually split up into two different crews, one at Sandy's house, one at Danny's house. And we were actually short a crew leader, so it made it a little bit more difficult for our project leader, so that he was always running around getting supplies, trying to keep things coordinated and stuff. So he needed someone to be there to just kind of oversee, make sure things were going smoothly and help people. Office manager, they take care of the receipts. I mean, they're like right on them. Cook, and I think it's a new thing, RV volunteers. They, you can go drive your RV to a spot, and like they have special projects just for them to be there for like a few weeks with other RV volunteers. They provide the housing, food, tools, and supplies are provided. Of course, donations are welcome. So that was a big seller for me. when I was trying to decide who I was going to go with was that all I had to do was get myself there. And that was it. So, I can do that. They serve in all natural disasters, big and small. They call it muck out, clean up. So when you hear that a disaster has happened, if you get in with MDS, you can go quickly down and they just go, they clean up people's homes, just everything that you can do. And honestly, any of us can participate in that. And they said it doesn't matter like who it is, they just clean out anybody's home. It's not specially chosen or anything. Then they've formed a long-term recovery committee. It has community leaders within that area as part of that committee, and they help kind of, they suggest where MDS might want to go next, who to help. I have a lot of respect for all of them, but especially the project leader of trying to figure out the people he's getting to come in. You know, he's just, people sign up. And, you know, I said, well, if you have too many people that they're, you know, it'll say strength between 1 and 5, which, how good are you at this? I said, if you get too many bunch of people, they're all like ones. Can you just like, do you say, sorry, we've got too many of those, you'll have to choose a different week or something? He said, nope, it would take them all. So I think they do with what they have, what they can. And he encouraged us, it was not a race to get things done. And the guys that I was there with, you know, some of them, they do it, this stuff for a living, or, you know, are just very familiar. And they're like how Aaron and I are a lot with a lot of stuff, like, well, I came here to do this, so I want to get it done before I walk out the door. So that was hard. I wanted to do more on Danny's house than what I did. But it's just kind of how it worked out, I guess. So, next slide. And I guess the final one. That's the inside of one of their trailers. They have trailers all over the place. And while we were there, they actually needed to take some of our trucks to, I think, Western Kentucky. And so they kind of had to work with that. And there's all these guys came in. They were, what's the word? When there was like, they had a convoy of MDS trucks. And so I think they'd already pulled a truck or two someplace else, and they were stopping by our place to grab some and then continue on. So you think too, like, they must have these guys I think that's just what they do. They just move things around to wherever it needs done. They said in the 2022 fiscal year had 6,495 volunteers. They did 57 new homes, 302 repairs, 281 cleanups, and they built 3 bridges. My daily schedule, and this is common for everybody that does it every week, 6:15, you get in the kitchen and they have stuff that you can pack your lunch with. Another side note, I like to do gluten-free, like, since I had my gallbladder out. So I wasn't going to say anything about it, you know, I'll figure it out. And they asked me and I said, well, you know, we can do that. And them cooks, oh my goodness, they were all about gluten. You know, this is Leia's. And I think the first time she did something was just supposed to be for Leia, it was brownies. And the project leader's like, well, why does she just get brownies? So, and I mean, she had this big tray, and I was like, you know, I can't eat all this, you know? So, and honestly, I probably only got like 2 brownies from that whole tray. They ate them up. So it was kind of fun. The cooks had fun with it, and the guys would be like, oh, let's try this. So we do pack our lunches. 6:45 was when breakfast was served. Then you could volunteer to be the person that did devotions that morning. either way, devotions got done. That was at 7:15, and the idea was to leave for the job site at 7:30. And about 4 o'clock, we would pack up where we're at with the intent to try to be back at base by 5 so that we could clean up and have dinner at 6. And we always had a daily review, and the project leader really encouraged every single person to talk about what they did that day. So he said, I want everybody to know what everybody else is doing. I did what I could because I was so humbled. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'll just do what I can. And I really encourage everybody. I encourage you to try doing something with MDS or supporting it at least, or some other organization. And I mean, I'll probably maybe see if I can go with really push for that cook thing. But just do what you can, because that's better than doing nothing. So thank you so much for sharing. And I just thank you for asking me to share, because I know we were supposed to share at church, but I was really uncomfortable asking. So thanks so much for asking me to do it. I was happy to.